So we're on Daf Ayin Zayin. Okay. And we're up to Rava Litame, which is three lines down from the top. And let's just review what we know from Rava. Rava said that the shear of Yayin for Hotzah is one quarter of a revius, which means that if you have concentrated wine and you would add three parts water to the concentrated wine that you'd have, you'd end up with a koshel bracha. There are two chidushim here in Rava. One chidush is in Hilchas Shabbos that you don't have to take out a cup of wine, you have to take out the amount of wine that would produce a cup of wine if you added the right proportion of water. Number two, Rav is being mechadish a chiddush in Hilchas Koshel Bracha, that Koshel Bracha requires that you take the concentrated wine and you do what's called meziga, which means you dilute that concentrated wine by adding three parts water to one part of wine. And that's what the Gemara says. V'Rava L'Tamei, there's another statement of Rava that is consistent with this one. The Omar Rava, Rava says, Kol Chamra D'Lo Dori Adchad Tlas Maya Lav Chamrahu. In other words, if you don't have a ratio of three parts water to one part of wine, then it's not good wine. Rava goes shy of disqualifying that wine, but he says that's not really what wine is all about. Because if you don't have three parts water, then the wine will be too strong, it'll be too concentrated, and that's not the kind of wine that you want to use for a koshel bracha, for Birkas HaMazon, or for other kinds of mitzvahs. Omar Abayi Shtei Tshuvas Bedover. I have two questions, two objections to raise. Number one, Chada. Disnan, we have a Mishnah in Masechta Nida, and the Mishnah is talking about different colors of what might be dam. So sometimes if it's a yellowish color, you don't assume it's dam, but if it's a reddish color, you assume it's dam nida. And hamazug, if you want to take wine and dilute it, you will end up with a color that's the most similar color to dam nida that you can get. So this is the way you teach someone, what kind of color would give you dam nida. So if you take concentrated wine and mazug and you dilute it, shnei chalkei mayim v'yechad yayin. So the ratio now is 1 to 3, meaning that you add two chalakim, two parts, to one part of wine. And the Mishnah in Masechta Nida speaks about yayin shironi, right? That's in the north. There was an area in the northern Israel called Sharon, and that's where they got the wine from. But the Mishnah should have said that the dilution would have been 3 to 1, according to Ryu Rava. Why does it say 2 to 1? The Odin, furthermore, I have another kasha, and that is Mayim Bibad Umitztarfim. The whole logic of your approach, Rava, makes no sense. What are you telling me? That he's Chayef Otzah because he took out a quarter of a Revius Yayin. And what are you saying? Because that quarter of Revius Yayin has Chashivus, it's a significant amount of Yayin such that you're Chayef Otzah. Why? Because you could add three parts of water. Where is the water? The water is in the kad. It's in the barrel. So you're Chayef for the Chashivus of an entity that doesn't have the water that it needs to make the wine. The wine is good wine when it's diluted. Now it's pure concentrated wine, it's not good wine. So you're going to tell me you're chayef otzah on something that lacks chashivus? Amalei Rava, Rava says, your question is not a question. Why hadika amrit shnei chelkei mayim? That which you found in the Mishnah, in Masechta Nida, that the ratio is 2 to 1. Echad yayin, that's only min yayin ashironi. Why? Because yayin from Sharon is a different kind of a wine. And that wine can be diluted even if you only have two parts of water. Yayin hashironi lechud. and a Rafi. Rafi means you don't, it's not as concentrated as regular classic wine. Classic wine is so concentrated that in order to dilute it, you'll need three parts water against one part of wine. Here, in the case of Yain Sharoni, all you need, because it's already somewhat diluted, even if it's natural concentrated form, you only need two parts water against one part of wine. Inami, I'll give you another answer. If you don't want to agree that Yain Sharoni is different, Hasam, there the Mishnah is not talking to you about what is a good wine for drinking purposes. That's not the subject of the Mishnah, but rather Mishum Chazusa. The Mishnah is only interested in the way that the color appears to the eye. And as far as Yayin, to get that color that's most similar to Dam Nida, you add two parts water to one part of wine. Avalitaima, if you're talking about drinking the wine and having the good taste of wine, you're a connoisseur in wine, by tfei, you need another portion of water in order to dilute the wine enough that it's now tasty and it's appropriate. Now your second question, Udaka Amrit Mayim Bekadu Mitztarfim, how can I calculate as if the water that's really in the barrel is now with me in the with the concentrated wine? It's not I'm not carrying the water. The water is in the barrel. It's not moving anywhere. The answer is that you have to understand what Shiurim and Shabbos is all about, Abai. Rav is giving Abai a fundamental lesson. L'inyan Shabbos, midi dechashivi be'inan, the whole concept of a shear, of a minimum requirement, of a minimum volume, is to set up chashivis. Something significant, something that you'd want to lock up in your closet or in your refrigerator. Hanami, and if you have 1/4 of a revius of concentrated wine, chashiv, that's considered chashiv. Why? Because all you have to do is just mix in the water. So when you deal with storing wine or selling wine, you'll sell the concentrated wine, and the buyer will find plenty of opportunities to mix in the water. But the chashivas itself is the fact that I've given you the potential to create a revius of yayin. And what comes out of this whole discussion is not just the opinion of Rava as far as Hotzah is concerned, and the shear of Hotzah, meaning 1/4 of a revius, but moreover, a definition of a koshel bracha. That a koshel bracha should have 3 parts water and 1 part wine. Now the Gemara goes on to discuss wine that's no longer liquid. It became congealed. That's called yavesh. Now, if it's yavesh, we no longer, it's not appropriate, it doesn't fit to use the shear of revius. So what would be the shear of yayin sheyavesh? If he's carrying out dried, congealed wine, so the Gemara quotes a brisa Tana, this is the brisa of Rabbi Nassan, bikizayis. Now, kizayis is a shear of chashivas for solids, but Rabbi Nassan is teaching us that it parallels the shear of revius in liquids, which means that if you took a revius of yayin and you congealed it, it would have the form of a solid that is a kizayis, its olive size. Omer Rav Yosef, Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yuda, Omer Dovrecha. I'm going to quote to you, says Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi is going to say the same thing in a different context than the same thing that we saw here in Rabbi Nassan, that there's a parallel between the liquid revius, that shear, and the solid of kizayis. Rabbi Nassan, Hadamarn, we've already indicated Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, where do we find it? The Sanya, we have a Braisa, and here we're dealing with a machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. And in this Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda records six cases where Beit Shammai are lenient and Beis Hillel are machmir. Shisha dvar mikulei Beit Shammai michumrei Beis Hillel. Now, in truth, there are a lot more than six, but these were the six that Rabbi Yehuda knew about. And we're interested in the first of the six. And that is Dam Nevela. So what's Dam Nevela? Dam Nevela is the following. Nevela, a carcass of an animal that died without Shechita, has the status of Avi Avos HaTumah. And if somebody eats the nevela, the meat of a carcass, without shechita, he becomes an av hatumah. That's a severe level of tumah, such that if he comes in contact with Adam or Kalim, he conveys tumah. But what's the status of dam nevela? The Torah says that the nevela itself, the flesh of the carcass, is an av hatumah. But what about the blood? Is Beit Shammai Mitarim. They're of the opinion that the Torah only considers the flesh itself of the carcass as an avi avos hatum, but not the blood. Ubeisil mitamim. Even the dam is considered like the basar. Om Rab Yossi, Rab Yehuda, afkish etimu beis hillel, lo timu el bedam sheyesh bo revius. The minimum amount of dam that comes from this nevela that could generate tumah is a revius. But what happens if the dam could congeals? Is then hoil v'yochel likrosh v'lamed al kizayis. Oh, so what's Rav Yossi telling us here? That why is the shear of tumah for dam a revius? The answer is because according to Beis Hillel, we equate dam with the nevela itself. Well, what would be the shear of tumah in the nevela? It would be kizayis. The parallel in liquids, in dam in this case, would be a revius, which means that if the revius were converted into a solid, it would give you, it would produce a kizayis. So revius and kizayis are one and the same. Revius is in liquids, and kizayis is in solids. Omar Abaye says, Dilma Lohi. I don't think that you can make an equation here between Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yossi. Adkan lo koma Rabbi Nosson hocha, deboi revius. When does Rabbi Nosson say that Yochayev for Hotzah and Shabbos, and that if the revius of Yayin coagulates, then you need to take out a kizayis worth. That's only be Yayin. Yayin is different than Dam because it's kolish. It's got a thin constitution. And therefore, since it's thin, it's going to lose a significant amount of its volume when it congeals. Because that's the nature of the physics of congealing a thin liquid. Avol bedam disamich. Samich means it's thick, so blood is thick, and therefore kizayis lo boy revius. You don't need a revius of yayin in order to produce a kizayis worth of congealed dam. Why? Because dam is more thick. So in the case of yayin, I need a full revius of yayin in order to produce a kizayis worth of congealed yayin. But in the case of dam, which is very thick, even if I have less than a revius, I can still produce a kizayis. Now, in tumah, where Rabbi Yehuda was talking about the Shita Beis Hillel, so we're talking about Dam of Nevela, and we're trying to equate Dam of Nevela with a Kizayis of Basar Nevela in terms of what's Makabel Tumah. We don't need a full revius of Yayin, because you can produce an olive size of congealed yayin even with less than a revius, because the dam itself, because the dam itself is very thick. Inami says, I have another logical reason why you cannot equate the shitos here. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Hasam. When did Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda say, with regard to Tumas Nevela, the Kezayas Sagi Le'Birevius, that if you want to achieve a Kezayas of Dam, all you need is a Revius, that's only Bidam Disamich. That's when he says that it's enough to have a Revius of Dam in order to be Metami Tumas Nevela, because dam is very thick, and if you would take, you know, if you would take a revius worth of dam, you would certainly be able to produce a full kezias when it's congealed. Avol yain the kolish, wine which is thin, is kezias haviyosef mi revius. It could be that Rabbi Yossi would not agree with Rabbi Nosson. He would say that a kezias of congealed wine is more than a revius, which would mean that you could be chayef otzah in yayin if it was congealed, even if you didn't start with a revius, because you don't need a full revius to get to that kezias. V'chimapik pochus mi kezias l'chayef, and therefore, even if he takes out less than a kezias, that would be enough, because that's the congealed form of a revius of yayin. Okay, let's go back to the Mishnah now. Cholov, if he carries milk out into Rishus Arabim, what's the shear of milk? It's kidei gmiya. It's the amount of milk that you would swallow in one gulpful. Now, what we're about to embark upon is a study of words. There are certain words in Lashon Kodesh that could be written with two similar letters, and they may have different meanings, so it's very important for us to know which is the right spelling of the word. Now look at the word gemia, which means to swallow, and it's written with an ayin. Okay, it might be written with an ayin, but that doesn't mean that that's the correct spelling. Could be there's a mistake here. Iboilahu, the Gemara asks the fine question, Kidei Gmiya, should we read it with an olive? Or Kidei Gmiya with an ayin? Omer of Nachbar Yitzchak, I'll prove to you from a parsha. In Chayisor it says, Hakmi'ini no miat mayim ikadech. So Eliezer asks Rachel to swallow for him a bit of water from your jug. In other words, you have water in your jug and I need to swallow it. And the word for swallowing is hagmi'ini with an aleph. So we see that the word gmiya in our Mishnah should be written with an aleph. And that's how some of the scholars, you know, they changed the Mishnah. Let's see what we have. Our Mishnah has it with an ayin. I'm just curious. 1 second. Our Mishnah has it with an ayin. But there's a little note here on the side that says, Girsas ha'aruch, gemiyo with an aleph. Okay. That seems to be the final conclusion. And now we're going to go through a whole bunch of words that have two different spellings. Iboiluhu, we're now on daf ayin zayin omid beis. Gar'inim, oh gar'inim. We're talking about shells or pits. How do you write the word in Lashon Kodesh? Is it gar'inim with an aleph or gar'inim with an ayin? Omar Rabba Bar Ula. I have a pasuk to prove this. In Sefer Vayikra, the Torah says, V'nigra me'er kecha, to diminish its value. And the Gemara thinks that there's an equation here between the word vinigra and the word garin, which means that both of them should be spelled with an ayin. Now, what's the connection between the two? The word vinigra, when it's spelled with an ayin, mi erkecha, means to deduct something, right? So we in Erchin, there are certain cases where you deduct the value that he has to pay if he took a neder of Erchiolai. And when we talk about the mass of a fruit, we deduct from the fruit its pit or its shell. And therefore use the same garin with an ayin. Iboilu, another case where we don't know whether the spelling is an aleph or an ayin, is the case of coals that begin to go down to be extinguished. Omimos with an aleph, or is it omimos with an ayin? Om Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi, I have a posuk in part in Sefer Yechezkel. It says, Arazim lo amamuhu began Elohim. So we're talking about a cedar tree, which is called an Eitz Erez, and will not dim his splendor. So the Navi is talking about those beautiful, majestic cedar trees that are planted in Gan Eden, and they cannot detract from the glory of the Assyrian kingdom. So that the Navi Yechezkel is warning us about Assyria. In any event, it says Amamuhu, which means that it was diminished, and it's written with an ayin. So we see the same thing in terms of coals, which are beginning to get to cool off, and that should be spelled with an ayin. So again, Hagmeini is with an aleph, Garinim is with an ayin, and likewise Omamos is with an ayin. Iboilahu Ma'amtin Tnan Omi Amtin with an aleph, or with an ayin. So here we're talking about mukta. You're not allowed to move mukta. And in the case of a dead body, nebuch a corpse, you're not allowed to move the corpse, except for various situations where you are allowed to move it. But, so the question is, what about the eyes of the deceased? Are we allowed to close his eyes? Okay, so that's the subject of a sugya later on in Masechta Shabbos. And the word for closing the eyes is ma'amtsin. And the question is, should we write it with an ayin or with an aleph? Omer Abchiyah bar Abba, Omer Ab Yochanan, v'otzeim einov miros bara. So this, I think, is a pasuk in Yeshayo, let's see if I'm right. Just 1 second. Yeah. So we're talking about a tzaddik, and a tzaddik closes his eyes or averts his eyes so he doesn't see evil. And the word averts in Lashon Kodesh is otzeim, which means he closes his eyes. And therefore, in the Mishnah in Shabbos about ma'amtsin or not ma'amtsin, which is all the way at the end of Masechta Shabbos, we should write it with an ayin. That seems to be the end of this Gemara. It seems like in most cases, when you have a suffix, whether to write a word with an ayin or an aleph, we usually, not always, write it with an ayin. Tana Rabbanan, Hamotzi Cholav Shel Behema. Is there a difference in terms of the shear for hotzah of milk from an animal as opposed to human milk? And the answer is yes. The Brice establishes that if you're talking about cow's milk, it's kidei gemiyah. It's the amount for swallowing. Notice the word gemiyah is written with an aleph. But chalav shel isha, human milk, is how much is considered chashiv enough that if you carry it, you're chayav hotzah. Loven shel beitzah. This is already a different case. Now he's carrying out the white of a raw egg. And in both of these cases, it's kidei litain b'mishifa shel kilar. So kilar is the raw material for an ointment that was used on the eye to help the eye. And in its natural form, it was too strong. You had to somehow add something to the mixture of this kilar. And perhaps the most effective way of taking this very strong strong paste and diluting it was by adding human milk, or alternatively the white of an egg. It has some sort of liquid substance. We're going to talk about adding water later on. So the shear of Hotzah in Cholav Isha, or for the same price in Loven Shel Beitzah, would be the amount that you would carry in order to add to a kilar ointment, so that you can use it on both eyes. It would be one effective application of this kind of an ointment to both eyes. So how much of a quantity do you need to mix to this application called the kilar in order to produce enough of an ointment that would be effective medicinally to apply it as an ointment to two eyes? The kilar itself, what about this substance which we called a paste, some sort of a paste, is kidei loshuf b'mayim. In other words, he's carrying enough of this substance so that if he mixes it with water, then he'll have an ointment that's voluminous enough to apply to both his eyes. And this is very similar to what we saw earlier in terms of the concentrated wine. Boy, Rav Ashi says, when you talk about Loshuf B'mayim, are you looking at the object as it's sitting on the table? Look at this ointment. And it has enough to apply to two eyes. Oh, kidei achiza v'shifa. Not kidei shifa, is it the volume of the ointment sitting on the table, but if you would grab it, take it into your hands, and now you want to use it on the eye, when you apply it on the eye, then some of the kilar is going to get stuck on your fingers, so to speak. And therefore you have to add an extra X amount of volume to the kilar in order to guarantee that you'll be able to apply it successfully to two eyes. So let's say you put your fingers into this kilar, and now you want to apply it to the two eyes, each finger, but what happens is, some of the ointment gets stuck on your hands, it's not going to make it to the eye, so therefore you need what's called kidei achiza v'shifa. Teku, the Gemara has no solution, resolution of this question. Dvash, how much of a volume of honey are you carrying in order to be chayav for melechas hotzah of dvash? The Mishnah says, kidei liten ala kosis. They used to use honey for medicinal purposes, and they would put it on a sore. Tana, we have in a brisa, kidei liten al pi kosis. The Bryce is saying you don't need to be chayav for hotzos dvash, enough dvash to smear it around the entire sore. All you need is to put it on the top of the sore. Like a sore, you know, has a scab or whatever it has that protrudes a little bit higher. And what is this all about? Boy, Ravashi gives two possible explanations. Number one, al kosis apuma de kula kosis. Or number two, al dilma amursha kama de kosis. In other words, the sore comes to a head, and there's a tip of the head. So there's a part of the sore that's a little bit elevated from the skin, and then there's a little bit of a tip on the top of the sore. How much honey do you need in order to be chayav for Melechah Shabbos, in order to achieve your goal of having a medicinal application of honey to a sore? Do you need enough to cover the whole sore? That's called the mouth of the sore. Or is it enough that you have honey that would be placed on the tip of the sore? Lafuki hodrana delo. And one thing is clear, according to either interpretation of Ravashi, to the tzadim, is that you don't need enough honey in order to be chayav hotzah to go around the entire, you know, to calculate the entire sore. You either need the mouth of the sore, which is elevated, or perhaps it's enough the tip of the sore. And the Gemara once again ends up with Teku. Om Rav Yudah Marav. Now this is a fascinating kind of agadata. If you enjoy biology and so forth and so on, Kol Masha Bara Kodesh Baruch Hu Bo Lomo, whatever God created, Lo Bara Dover Echad Levatola, everything, even mosquitoes, even flies, even snakes, even all sorts of creatures, have a constructive purpose in this world. And if you would ask me, what's a zvuv, a fly, good for, I would say just to swat the fly, which I did a few seconds ago. I have to get rid of it. Anyway, so, you know, I don't know if you're reading in the papers, recently somebody was bitten by a snake. And I know of another case of somebody never who died from a snake bite very recently. So we'll see what a snake's good for. So bara shavlul likosis. Now, from what I understand, the shavlul are those things, those little, you know, jelly kind of, you know, creatures that you'll find that come up from the ground. And the Gemara says that you can put that on a sore, and it actually has a healing process. So the word slug starts with an S, and the sore starts with an S. So slug for sore. And zvuv, why did God create a fly? Litzira, because if you get bitten by a hornet, which is called a tzira, tzira is a whole sugya mesechta makis. If you eat a tzira, how many different sets of malchus you incur. Anyway, if somebody gets bitten by a hornet, Nebuch, then he should put a fly on it. I don't know if it's a live fly or a dead fly. Rashi seems to indicate that it's a dead fly. I mean, again, I'd love to, I just don't have time, if anybody has time, to Google this and figure out the biology of this. Yitush, what would you do with a mosquito or a gnat? I think you pronounce it gnat, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I don't think you pronounce the G, I don't know. Anyway, that's good for a cure for a bite of a snake. And not only that, even a snake itself, the actual physical body of a snake has a purpose. L'chafofis. Chafofis is a boil. Now, what are you going to do with a snake for a boil? He says, okay, that's coming around the bend, but let's just finish up the sentence. He says, vismamis li akrav. And a smamis, which is again some sort of a spider. I don't know exactly what kind of spider it is. And a spider itself is a cure for a scorpion. Now, the only thing I can tell you is that if chas v'shalom you get bitten by a scorpion and you rush to the hospital, make sure they take the scorpion with, because they can actually extract a venom from the scorpion that is therapeutic for the bite from the scorpion. But here the Gemara is talking about something different, and you're going to somehow use a spider and place it over the sting bite of a scorpion. Hechi avidle, how are you going to use a snake to cure a boil? Maisi chada uchmara, bring a white snake, I'm sorry, a black snake. Vechada chivara, and bring another white snake. I mean, I don't know, this sounds very dangerous, but again, you know, somebody was he's struck by boils. You know, boils is one of the Esser Makas. You know, you got to get rid of the boils. So somehow catch these snakes, you know. I have to pay the zoo for the snakes. I don't know. And then, Sholkile, he has to cook these two snakes. Vishayfile, I guess, I don't know if he still has the body of the snakes or after he cooks them, he has some sort of mush of two snakes. And with that mush, he rubs it over the boil. I'd love to know if modern science has any appreciation for this Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Emosheim. There are five categories of fear. Number one is Emas HaChalash Al Gibar, the fear of the weak for the strong. Emas mafgia al ari. Now the lion, which is supposed to be the most powerful beast and so forth and so on, is afraid of another beast which is called a mafgia. A mafgia is miloshan screaming. That this beast actually has a powerful scream or a cry, and the lion is afraid that when it hears this cry, it fears that maybe this is a great beast, and the lion actually flees, runs away. Now, according to some, this mafgia is a very fast animal. I don't know what it looks like, but it has razor-sharp claws and actually jumps onto the head of a lion and kills it by piercing the brain, the skull of the lion with its sharp claws. Okay, fine. Next, Emas Yitush Alpil. Imagine a great elephant, one of the largest animals in the world, is afraid of a mosquito. Apparently, these mosquitoes used to go into the trunk of the elephant, and the elephant couldn't get rid of it. And then Emas Mummis Alakrov. Okay, we're back to that spider. And the scorpion is afraid of the spider, which is really interesting. Somehow the spider is able to enter, Rashi says, into the body of the scorpion through its ear. And the scorpion is powerless to get rid of the spider. Emas snunis ala nesher. The fear of the swallow is upon the eagle. Why is an eagle afraid of a swallow? Because somehow the swallow is able to penetrate underneath the wings of the eagle, and the eagle is not able to spread its wings. And finally, Emas kilbis al livyosan. The fear of the kilbis on the livyosan. The livyosan is the largest fish, I think, that we know of. And the kilbis is some sort of small creeping creature, and it's able to kill the larger fish. Now, why does this brisa appear here in the Gemara? Because of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda made a statement that every creature that God created has a purpose. And now the Gemara is saying that aside from the medicinal purpose, which were Rabbi Yehuda's theory, all creatures are instruments of God to exact retribution on the wicked. So a person should never be arrogant and assume that if he has power, he won't be punished, because God can even use the lowliest of creatures, like in the case of what was his name? Titus. You remember the Gemara in Masechta Gittin says that Titus HaRasha, who destroyed the Migdash, was actually killed by a mosquito that entered into his brain or something. So you never know, Chas v'shalom, coronavirus is very, you can't even see it. The little things, if God wants to exact retribution, here you see that there's Amos HaCholosh Al HaGibor. Om Rabbi Yehuda Marav Maikro. What pasuk can we quote to indicate this concept, this hashkofa, about the awesome power of God? Hamavlig shod al oz. Pasuk in Amos that says that God causes the weak to triumph over the powerful. That's what Hanukkah is all about. Rabbi Zera Ashkach le Rabbi Yehuda Davi Koya Pischa de Bechamua Vechazi Davi Bedicha Daite. Rabbi Zera chanced upon Rabbi Yehuda when he was at the door of his father-in-law's house. I don't know why the Gemara has to tell us all these details, but anyway, what's most important is that Rabbi Zera saw that Rabbi Yehuda was in a very good mood. And he thought that this is a shas hakosher to ask him all sorts of deep questions of biology. that, and therefore he concluded he boy mine kol chalolei alma. If he asked him anything about that exists in the chalal, in the airspace of the universe, havi amalei, he can expect Rabbi Yehuda to give him an answer. And apparently Rabbi Zera knew that Rabbi Yehuda was a great scholar in science, in biology, in zoology. So Rabbi Zera takes advantage of this wonderful opportunity, Amalei, and he's going to ask him a whole series of questions about biology. Some of these questions require a microscope. I don't know exactly how Rabbi Zera was aware of them. You know, we're going to soon see Gemara about the tentacles of a locust. The antenna of a locust. I don't know how you... Okay, but I don't know if you need a microscope for that. In any event, so the first question he asks him is, my time is easy, Mazga and Beresha. Why is it that the sheep follow the goats? For Hadar Imri, and the sheep go beyond the goats. Omer Le, Kibriyaso Shel Olam. God creates darkness and then light. So black comes before white. Kibriyaso Shel Olam, Debereisa Chashucha Vahadar Nahora. First comes darkness and then light. The goats are dark and the sheep are white. Yeah, I know that the sheep are white. I didn't know goats are dark. I guess they're... I don't know. I'd love to know if only dark goats walk in front of light sheep. I don't know. My timer, second question. Hani Mechasyon Vahani Megalyon. Okay, we're going to take a look at the backside of sheep and the backside of goats. In the case of sheep, their private parts are covered by a tail. In the case of goats, there's no tail. Their privates are exposed, completely exposed. As if to say maybe God is punishing the goats. Hani demachasinon minayu. The sheep offer us wool, and we have to give gratitude. God in his creation expresses, so to speak, hakaras hatov to the sheep and covers their private parts, because mida keneged mida, they cover our private parts, because we shear off the wool from the back of the sheep and we make garments out of it. Vahani, but in the case of goats, whereas it's true that we take the hairs and the shearings of goats and we make sacks out of them, but we don't make clothes out of them. Normal clothes are not manufactured from the hairs of goats. So lo mechasinon minayu. Now again, I don't know why goats should be punished for that, just because they cannot offer shearings that can be used to cover the body. But the Maisa, the bottom line, it sounds like the Gemara is assuming that animals don't have to cover their private parts. You know, it wasn't built into nature that the animals have to have tails that would cover their privates. But in the case of sheep, God wanted to bestow and convey this idea of Hakar Satov, which he didn't have to do in the case of goats, is Megalion. It's in the case of goats, their back parts are exposed. Question number three. My taima gamla zutar gnuvte. Why is it that a camel, gnuvte, its tail, zutar is always small. So the camel has a small tail, mishum di ochal kise. The cow eats things that have thorns on it. And that could be dangerous, because if it has a long tail, then the tail could get entangled in the thorns. So God, is divine wisdom, he created a camel that eats from thorns, but yet it doesn't have a long tail that could get entangled in the thorns. Question number four, Rabbi Zera asks in my timer, Torah aricha gnuvte, the shar, the ox has a long tail. And Rabbi Yehuda responds, Mishum de dairi bi'agme, it lives in places where there are many there are many mosquitoes and so forth and so on. That's called Agme, and Agam is a swamp. Uboy Lekashkushe Baki. Lekashkushe means to wag its tail. Baki. Baki means against these gnats, which frequent the marshlands, the wet areas. My timer, what is this, question number five, I think, if I have the count, anyway. Karno de kamtsa rechicha. I don't know. Rechicha means soft. Kamtsa is a locust. Okay, this is, I'm not sure what the size of a locust is. I always thought locusts are pretty small. But anyway, they have antenna or horns in front, and they protect the eyes of the locust. Bishum de dire bechilki. They live amongst very sharp willows. And the willows very often will pierce the eyes of the locusts. The ikasha, and if the antenna, which are the horns that protect the eyes, were tough, as we said before, they were rechicha, they're soft, but if they would have been tough, then the sharp edges of the willows would have penetrated into these very tough antenna, had they been rigid, and they would dislodge them, and that would cause the locust blindness. The Omer Shmuel, Haiman de boy de lisme lekamts, if you want to blind the locust, l'shoflinu lekarne, you remove its antenna, because the antenna are there to protect the eyes. So remove them, and it'll go blind. Next question. Rav Zeri asks, my taima hai timra de tarnagola midle li'ela. The eyelids of all animals, the upper eyelid closes over the bottom eyelid in order to close and protect the eye. In the case of a rooster, it goes just the opposite. The rooster has to raise his lower eyelid in order to close his upper eyelid. Very strange phenomenon in nature. And Rabbi Yehuda, without hesitating, says, "Didairi adape," because the rooster tends to live in places where there's a lot of smoke, there are a lot of beams and boards and wood. That's where they hang out. And as a result, these are places where smoke will rise, and Eil Kutra Misavra, and the roosters would Chas Shalom go blind. So it's very important that when the smoke comes up from the lower altitudes to the higher altitudes, the rooster has a way of protecting its eyes by closing the lower eyelid as the smoke rises. Now at this point, Rabbi Zera changes the pattern of his questions. He is no longer asking about biological phenomenon, strange biological. He's now asking about the meaning of words. Now, I think what underlies this sugya that we're about to learn is that Aramaic is a derivation from Lashon Kodesh to some extent. So the word dasha, which is a door, what is the meaning of the word door? The dasha, every word etymologically has a meaning in terms of the way we pronounce it. And that's the theory of Rabbi Yehuda. And he says dasha should be read, the dalid is derech, and the shin should be read sham. Derech sham, meaning through there. You go your way through there, through the door. Darga is made up, he says, of two words, derech, gag. So darga is a ladder, and the way to get up to the ladder is by to get up to the roof is by climbing the ladder. Maskolisa, which is a very complicated Aramaic word, is a dipping sauce, and you read it mem tuf is masai, and tuf chaf lamed is tichled da. when it will be finished, because once you have a sauce, then it lasts usually for a long time. You only dip a little bit in it. And he's wondering how long will it last. So the name itself indicates how long will it last. Besa, a house. Bo, the asiv ba, come and I will sit therein, or I will live therein. Biksa, which is a small house, what we call a budka in Arabic, is bay akta, is a narrow, small place. Kufta, kof visiv, tip it over and sit. Okay, you have some sort of concrete or mortar, and you tip it over, and if it's hard, you can sit on it. Livnei are bricks, is livnei v'nei, for one's children's children. In other words, these are bricks that you build houses, and you hope that these edifices will endure for many generations. Hutza is kind of straw, like pieces of straw. And why are they called hutza? Because the hay of hutza is a replacement for a ches. And the tzadi with the ches is a reference to chatzitza. So what they used to do is they used to take these different pieces of straw, and they would make some sort of a machitza out of it, and that would be a partition to separate one thing from the other. Chatzba, which is a barrel, shechotzev mayim min hanor, you use it to draw water from the river. Kuza is a certain kind of jug, and it is kazeh. You know, it's kazeh means it's just itsy bitsy. It's a very small jug. Shutisa is a kind of a hadas that has, you know, too many leaves on it, and that comes to the word shutisa. It's like foolish. Which means it's not growing in the normal way. However, there's a chiddush in Rashi. Rashi says that they used to use these hadasim in order to sing and dance in front of the broom and bride at a wedding to enhance the joy of the couple, and that's called shotisa. You mean when you abandon your inhibitions and you go wild and foolish. Mashia kalsa. The bride washes with a mashkilsa. I guess it's a very fancy kind of detergent, and it was designated for a kala because I guess it was probably very expensive. And a seesaw is called chasirta. Chasirta is miloshen chaser, it's missing something. So what are we talking about here? Hand mortar, which was a block of wood that was partially hollowed out. So the hollowing means it's missing part of its portion. Buchna, which is a pestle. Bo v'achna, come and I will strike it, because the buchna is used in the process of crushing. Levusha, cloak that we put on our body, lo busha, so we should go without embarrassment. We should cover our body. Glima, which is another word for a cloak. Shenasa bo kigolam. If you wear it, you look like a shapeless form, because the glima was like a bag, you know, it was very, very wide. So you look like you have no shape, like a golem. Gulsa. Gulsa is a very fine cape. Gale the asiv. Before you sit down, you sort of pick it up, and therefore you sort of reveal whatever you reveal when you pick up a cloak. I don't know. Puria is a bed. Sheparin v'ravinba, because people will multiply there. Bar zikna, and a dried out water pit is called a bar zikna, bar ze naki. the pit is clean. I guess it means the water in the pit is clean water. Sudra, which is what you wear on your head. Sod Hashem li Reav. That indicates the secrets of Hashem that are revealed to people who demonstrate their Yira Shamayim by covering their head. Apanda, which is a pavilion, is a pitcha den, which means that everyone should fit into or come into this door, this delis. Tanur Rabbanon, shlosha kol zman shemazkinim osifin gvura. Most things or creatures, when they get older, they get weaker, but there are three exceptions to the rule. The older they get, the stronger they get. The Eluhim dag, a fish grows and gets stronger. Nachash, a snake gets stronger. And Chazir, a pig gets stronger. And this is the end of this long Agadita, which leads us back to the Mishnah of Shiurim, in this case, the Shir of Shemen. How much oil do you have to carry out into Rosh Hashanah to be Chayav for Hotzah? So we're ending here on the bottom of Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis, which is the two dots that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom of the page. So I leave you with that for Shabbos. I'm not so worried about Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis, just to finish that piece up. That's okay. You need enough shemen to cover and anoint a small finger. The Gemara goes back and forth, whose finger? An adult's finger, a child's finger, a baby's finger. But the next Mishnah, on Daf Ayin Ches, Hamotzi Chevel, okay, that's a little bit more challenging. I wish we had an opportunity. Alright, fine. See if we can copyright another few lines here. Shemen Kidei Losuch Ever Katan. Oil enough to anoint a small limb. Amri Deber of Yanai. Shemen Kidei Losuch Ever Katon Shel Katon Ben Yomo. So it's not just the Ever Katon, it's not just a small limb, it's a small limb on a small child, a baby that was just born. The Gemara objects from a Brisa, because Mesve, it says in the Brisa, Kidei Losuch Ever Katon Vikaton ben yomo. So the shear of Shemen in the Brisa is one of two things. Either it's an Aver cotton, which would apply even for an adult, or a cotton ben yomo, or an infant, a day old infant. My love, doesn't this mean Aver cotton de gadol? We're talking about a small limb of an adult, or alternatively, Aver gadol shel cotton ben yomo, or a larger limb of a one-day-old baby. But in any event, it's certainly not the two of them, Aver Katan of a Katan Ben Yomo. Amri Loch de Be'rav Yanai, lo. That's not what the Brisa has in mind. Hachi Komer, here's the way we interpret the Brisa. Shemen, if he carries oil out in Rishu Saram, kidei losuch Aver Katan, shel Katan Ben Yomo. So you don't read it as two separate segments of a sentence with a vav in the middle, but rather it's one flowing sentence, that it's the amount of oil that it would take to anoint a small limb of a small child. I mean, that's obviously a minimum shear. And lema ketanoi, perhaps this issue about the minimum amount of oil is machlokas tanoim. And the Brisa, now we have another Brisa, it says, Shemen kidei losuch ever katon vikaton ben yomo, which seems to indicate again that we separate it into two pieces here. So we're talking about a small limb, which means a small limb of an adult, and the body of a day-old infant. Divrei Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Rabbi Nosson, he has a different opinion. Rabbi Nosson Omer Kidei Losuch Ever Katan, a small limb. My lav b'hakam ifli. Should we interpret it that the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar sover he holds aver katan shel katan? So that's the first Tana here, and I guess he's again using the vav in a different way. You know that the vav is telling me, okay, it's an aver katan, but you should know it's also an aver katan of a katan ben yomo. And then we get to Rabbi Nasan Omer. He says, aver katan the gadol or aver gadol the katan, either a small limb of an adult or a larger limb of a day old baby. Aval aver katan shall katan ben yomo lo. But the small size of a minimum that's necessary for a small limb of a day old infant, that's not sufficient, and he would not violate the hotzah, and it's not choshev. The Gemara says lo, the kuli al maver katan de katan ben yomo lo. Everyone agrees that it's not enough to take out enough oil for a small limb of a day old baby. And here we're on Dafa in Chesam now, the Lesa de Rabbi Yanai. And we're going to reject those Debei Rav Yanai scholars. The Hacha Bahakam Ifli, what's the machlokas in this Braisa? Is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Savar, Aver Katan de Gadol, the Aver Gadol de Katan ben Yomo, Ki Hadadi Ninu. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar wants to identify the aver, the limb of a day-old infant, with a small limb of an adult. They're both the identical exact amount, and that's the volume of oil which constitutes the chashivus of meleches hotzav. Rabbi Nasan Savar, aver katan de gadol in, aver gadol de katan ben yomo lo. That the amount of oil that you need for a small limb of an adult, yes, that is a machayev, that's a shear. But aver gadol, if you talk about even a larger limb of a baby that was just born today, that's not enough to be machayev. So according to this new interpretation, neither one of the two tanoim would accept the Bei Rav Yanai that a small aver of a small newborn baby would be sufficient of an amount for Hotzos Shemin. My Havila, what's the final halacha? Toshma Desanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Kidei Losuch Aver Katan Shel Katan Ben Yoma. He takes out enough to anoint the small limb of a day old baby. And this really supports what we saw in Debei Rav Yanai. That was the first interpretation, and that's the correct one, and that's how we paskin l'halacha. Okay then, so we ended here on the top of Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph.